everybody. I'm Bill Buckmaster, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Tom's engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. He's in the control room. And I'm in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio on this Friday, February 12th, 2021. Tom, do you know what day this is?
2 days before Valentine's?
No. Hey, you're talking to a native Chicago, Illinois guy. This is Lincoln's birthday.
That's right. And then Washington's birthday is
22nd, the 22nd. Of February.
And we're grouping them together.
This will age me, I'm sure, but not that we've not gone there before. But when I was growing up, it was, of course, the federal holiday was today.
Why did we decide to quit celebrating them on their birthday dates?
I don't know. To go to the 3-day weekend thing. But anyway, which is fine, because we are doing a 3-day weekend here at Bustos Media. Anyway, it's Lincoln's birthday, and this is 1030 Tucson's trusted source for news talk, KVOI, worldwide live listening and podcast of the show on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. The Buckmaster Show live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. On Friday, we do a media shout out to some media outlets that have been very good to us over the years by prominently displaying the Buckmaster Show logo on the homepage of their websites. So that gets you directly over to our program, TucsonSentinel.com. Thank you to Dylan Smith. Thanks to Dan Shear of the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, Tucson Local Media Group and its portfolio of publications, including the Tucson Weekly. Jim Nintzel, where he is the executive editor, has been very helpful to us, a good friend over the years. Also, Inside Tucson Business, Oro Valley Explorer, Marana News, Foothills News, and Desert Times. Well, the University of Arizona continues to test wastewater in dorms for the coronavirus. Dr. Charles Gerba, a University of Arizona microbiology professor in the school's Department of Environmental Science, has been studying wastewater for 40 years at the University of Arizona, but never like this current project that began last fall. Joining me in our conversation with Dr. Gerba on the live line is Tim Steller, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Tim, how's your day going so far?
Going pretty good. I was just thinking about getting a Buckmaster Show logo tattooed somewhere. Where would I put that?
Oh, my gosh. And then we would just have to...
I could put a B on each cheek. B, and then people would ask me why. And
yeah.
Say, that's for the Buckmaster Show.
Yeah, or on your wrist, and we could just tap your wrist and get a link right to the Buckmaster Show. All right, Dr. Gerba, how are you?
Oh, doing great.
So tell me, what has this been done anywhere before? Is this kind of new stuff? I know it's not a real pleasant subject talking about people's poop, but we are learning, aren't we, quite a few things about this?
Yeah, a lot more. You know, actually, testing wastewater to look for infectious diseases goes back more than 40 years. It was first used for looking for poliovirus cases, particularly initially in Finland and Israel, because they were worried about people coming in the country with poliovirus, and then they would start a vaccination program. Today, it's used for the poliovirus eradication program, particularly in Pakistan and Afghanistan, where they can test the community, determine if anybody has poliovirus, and then if they find the poliovirus, then they do a vaccination program. So it's been very successfully used for that around the world for many years. Of course, looking for SARS-CoV-2 is a new innovation, and it's really taken off. It's probably thousands of samples around the world of wastewater are collected every day for looking for SARS-CoV-2, because it's found a real tool to look at whether cases are going up or down and getting a relative idea how many cases you have in a community now. So I think this is going to take off for looking for a lot of different infectious diseases like influenza. And basically, any disease you get with a microorganism, it ends up in the sewage. So you can get an idea of the incidence of almost anything in the wastewater.
How does it work at the University of Arizona? Do you have a couple of teams that get out there first thing in the morning and then bring the samples to you and your team?
Yes, they do. We have a team that goes to the sewer lines of the various dormitories or facilities at the University of Arizona, and they bring their samples here by 10 o'clock in the morning. And then by usually around 4 o'clock, we have the results for it because we've gotten it down to a really good process for their dormitories. And we do monitor the wastewater here at Tucson a couple of days a week to see what the trends are.
And then how? What has the trend been? Give us kind of when this project began and where are we today?
Yeah, it began back really in last March and that, and then progressed over the summer till we developed a plan for monitoring the dormitories for when the students came back. And really, it was almost a couple of days before the students were back, we started getting a positive in one dorm. And then we reacted to identifying those students by doing clinical tests and then removing them. Wastewater went back to normal. And we followed that trend. You know, it was kind of interesting looking at the wastewater in the dorms in Tucson. I can tell you what every holiday is the incidence increases after Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, Thanksgiving, and Christmas was the biggest surge of the virus in the wastewater we had ever seen. It reached record levels. So the best way to stop a pandemic is ban holidays, I think, because we always get an increase because people meet other people and party on holidays.
Before I give it over to you, Tim, what are we seeing the caseload yesterday? It's up a bit today in Pima County, but the number of COVID cases in Pima County was below 100 for the first time in a long time. Is that being reflected in your samples, Dr. Gerba?
Yeah, we're seeing a decrease again. We're starting a decrease. We started a decrease actually last week. So we're usually ahead of the curve of what's going to happen by a few days. So, but it did reach record levels in January and early February, more virus than we'd ever seen.
All right, here's Tim Steller.
So, Dr. Gerba, when you're doing these tests every day, what is normal? Is it zero presence of SARS-CoV-2 virus, or is there some baseline level that you expect?
Yeah, you know, we actually went about 6 weeks with nothing in the dorms after we did, you know, trace and remove and that. But, yeah, usually we have action levels, zero we want. If you have 100 per liter, as we use it, 100 per quart, you could say. We don't take action, just maybe increase disinfectant hygiene practices, emphasize those. And then when we get to a higher level, then we recommend starting random testing of the students. And then if you get to a very high level, like million or billion per quart of wastewater, then we recommend testing all the students in that. But you're certainly able to find out what are the party dorms on campus, that's for sure. They always seem to have more than other dorms, you know. It's the nerd dorms, you know, where all the honor students are that are always really low.
Do people excrete the virus before they start feeling sick? What is the chronology of the COVID in the wastewater?
Yeah, you do start excreting it before you get ill, you usually several days. In the case of the dormitories, you have about a four-day lead time. We learn we usually can find it. Wastewater, you check their students are usually asymptomatic, and it's about 4 days before they become symptomatic in that. Other studies done in Europe indicate that you got about 7 to 10 days in a community before you start clinically seeing the cases. So we do have a warning time, and it's been very successful, we think, in removing students who could spread the virus in the dormitories. I think it looked pretty successful there in the fall when we analyzed the data.
I just had a thought about when we flush the toilet, would it be a good idea to close the lid before we flush, Dr. Gerba?
You know, you do get an aerosol when you flush. You know, how important that is in the spread of SARS-CoV-2 is up in the debate, but certainly other viruses you do. You know, you don't want to keep your toothbrush within 3 feet of the toilet because you're going to be brushing your teeth if it was in the toilet, probably from what we've seen in tracer studies and that. So I'm always the one with public toilets. I flush and run.
All right, Tim. Go ahead, Tim.
Yeah, Dr. Gerba, actually, to clarify something, and again, not to be too crude, but is the virus that you detect strictly in the, does it come from the feces or urine or both?
Both. You actually excrete SARS-CoV-2 virus in the urine, but anytime you're infected with a lot of viral infections, you actually excrete infectious virus in urine. You know, there's always the wives' tale, I think it is, that urine is sterile, and it's really not. Many physicians don't even know that, but when you have an active viral infection, you can excrete infectious virus in the urine.
I had not heard that about urine. Could that be used as a COVID screening test, the urine?
That's been suggested. Even feces has been suggested, rectal swabs in that for detecting. But yeah, you could use urine for that. Urine is used to diagnose some infections like the Legionella, the aerosol bacteria, you know, from cooling towers transmitted. You can actually find the antigen in the urine. So urine can be used.
I want to switch to another virus, to the influenza virus. I'm hearing that our virus, the influenza for this time of year, it's nationwide 90% less than what it should be. Are your samples, are you looking for influenza, or is this strictly, are you looking for the COVID-19?
You know, historically, we are going to be looking for the influenza. Right now, we're focused largely on SARS-CoV-2, but you do excrete the influenza virus in your feces, too. So we hope to go back and look at that, but I'm sure it's going to be reflected in very low levels. So fortunately, we can preserve our samples for years, so we're going to go back and look for some of these other things you mentioned to see how useful they are.
Tim, did you have anything else on this, or should I take the break here?
Well, let me just ask you, how has your work life or life in general changed? How has the pandemic changed your work life beyond what you mentioned as far as the daily testing routine, Dr. Gerber?
Yeah, it's been really quite intense. Besides doing that, we're doing a lot of other things with SARS-CoV-2. I haven't had a day off since March of last year.
Wow.
So it's been pretty intense, but then again, you know, life of a microbiologist seems to be one plague after another. So, but we've had historically a lot of research that's relevant to the SARS-CoV-2 in terms of disease spread. So it's been quite demanding for us.
Well, why don't we talk now about something sweet? Talk about that. Oh, my goodness. What a transition. Oh, boy.
Grind those gears, Bill.
Sorry about that, Steve and the team up at Mona's, but we're going to talk about Valentine's Day and the holiday coming up. And there's, you know, doing something. Look for some sweet things for Tim. What about you? Are you planning something sweet for Patty? Patty, you going to pick up something?
I hadn't thought that much about it, but a run up for a Kringle sounds like a good idea.
And you're talking about, of course, run up to Mona's Danish Bakery for the home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. I'm happy to say I've had a beautiful cinnamon roll from Mona's this morning. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. So good. You know, Tim and Dr. Gerber, the thing with these beautiful cinnamon rolls, you always say to yourself, look at the size of that thing. I'll just carve out a very small portion. Well, then you go and you enjoy that portion. Before you know it, you're back carving, and it's all gone. And that was the case this morning. They're open right now for lunch. Mona's Danish Bakery is the website. Check it out. And they want to wish everybody a happy Valentine's Day. They've got some sweets for Valentine's Day that I think will impress your loved one. Check it out. We'll be right back. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things, Zocalo Village Studios. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Hello, I'm Jeanette Bewley, President and CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority, with news of our new effort to ensure air traveler safety and security going through our terminal. It's called TUS Cares, and you can read more about it on our website, flytucson.com. As you carefully weigh your decision to fly, I want you to know whether it's next week, next month, or next year, we are here for you at Tucson International Airport. Thank you.
A Citizens Advisory Committee of the Regional Transportation Authority is starting to review projects submitted by RTA member jurisdictions for consideration for the next RTA plan. The committee will consider plan goals and performance factors as they move into the selection process. The RTA will seek public feedback on the committee's draft plan when it is ready. Learn more about plan goals and sign up to stay informed at rtanext.com.
If it can't be grown, then it must be mined. Cause without minerals, you never find your phones, your cars, your solar panels, or your smart TVs with your favorite channels. Hospitals, schools, and public facilities result from mining's vast abilities. Dividends, taxes, and high-paid employment come from mining for your enjoyment. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowland Swan and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show on this Lincoln's Birthday Edition as we get ready to get into a three-day President's Day weekend. On our live line, our Friday Focus interview is Dr. Charles Gerba, University of Arizona microbiology professor in the school's Department of Environmental Science. We've been talking about Dr. Gerba and his associates and their testing of wastewater in the dorms for coronavirus. And Dr. Gerba shared with us in the first segment that the reflection of what we're seeing on the dashboard from the Arizona Department of Health showing that cases are definitely going down in Pima County, and that's being reflected in the research that Dr. Gerba and his associates are seeing. Also with us on the live line, Tim Steller, columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Dr. Gerba, let's talk about this study that was conducted really after COVID was just getting cranked up last spring by the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, UCLA, Princeton University. They were investigating how long the COVID-19 virus remains infectious on a variety of surfaces. Now, I understand in droplets, it's as long as 3 hours, copper as long as 4 hours, cardboard as long as, 24 hours? Could that be right? Anyway, has the thinking changed now 9 months later?
No, the data still indicates that it can survive anywhere from a few hours to several days on surfaces in that. So that's pretty much what's been repeated several times now. It does capable of surviving for a period of time on surfaces. So there's always potential you could get it on your fingers and bring it to your nose is where the virus has to go. I know with the work done in animals, you can transmit SARS-CoV-2 by putting the virus on the nose of, hamsters, for example.
Dr. Gerba, you mentioned that the virus can survive on these surfaces for these periods. And that, of course, there's a possibility that one can, pick it up and put it on your nose or an orifice or like your eyes, I think, where you could actually contract the disease. On the other hand, how common or how common is it that people get the illness this way as opposed to breathing it in?
Well, you know, the CDC has estimated 80% of common illnesses are related to your hands, of course, but usually it depends on the virus, like the common cold virus, rhinovirus, we call it. We believe most of it's transmitted that way by you getting it on your fingers and then touching your nose, mouth, or eyes, because you can transmit respiratory diseases like that very readily. Viruses like influenza, probably inhaling the virus is more common. It depends where you're at, though. We know you can get influenza on your fingers and rub your eyes, and it can be transmitted. Of course, the question we're facing is how common is that with SARS-CoV-2? We don't really know. We believe most of the transmission is by aerosol with SARS-CoV-2, like 80% maybe. I do know in studies we've been doing with the coronavirus that causes the common cold, you test like a porcelain surface, you'll get 50% of it on your finger, or formica, like a tabletop, you'll get maybe 20 or 30% on your finger. So the potential's there, although it's not believed to be the major route, it still has a potential. We don't have a real hard number how much is transmitted that way.
So this is why people talk about hand washing and not touching your eyes and nose as key ways of breaking the virus transmission.
Yeah, because you're doing that about 16 to 24 times per hour as an adult. If you're a child at 2 years old, you're doing it 50 times per hour. So you're doing it a lot more frequently than you think. You know, an adult, about every 3 or 4 minutes, you put your finger in your face in some way.
What about the wipes versus the spray?
You know, we've done testing on both in households, and the wipes tend to work better for controlling bacteria and viruses, because people use a wipe, they let it dry, so you get the right amount of contact time for the virus or bacteria to be killed, where people tend to spray and wipe right away. They don't allow a few minutes for it to kill. So in homes, boy, you can tell who uses a wipe versus a spray very easily. Also, the disinfectant tends to get tied up if you're using a cloth, for example. So usually the wipes seem to win hands down, at least in households that we've tested.
We had a question from a listener, and this goes back to the testing that you're doing on the feces in the wastewater. Have you been able to detect any of the variant virus mutations that we are so very worried about right now, Dr. Charles Gerba?
Yeah, we're doing that right now. We're looking for the UK variant and the South African variant, but our analysis isn't complete yet, but we are looking. We believe they've been potentially around since December in some cities. We monitor different cities, too, but we're putting all that together right now and analyzing our data. But, yeah, it's been here, I'd say, the UK at least since December, it looks like to us.
We're hearing that a growing chorus of infectious disease experts and public health officials, they're warning that this coronavirus will be endemic. In other words, this is going to be around like the flu. Where do you weigh in on this in your long career? What do you suspect, Dr. Gerba?
Yeah, I think it will probably be around for a while for a couple of reasons. We know animals can get infected, and that's a key with influenza being so common. You know, birds get it, swine get it, the virus evolves and comes back every year. And we know this coronavirus, you know, certain animals can be infected with the human SARS coronavirus. So I think we're likely to see this go on for some time, if not indefinitely.
Tim, go ahead. Tim Steller.
Sure. So, Dr. Gerba, looking back historically, there's been kind of a push and pull, I would say, between people who advocate for antibacterial wipes, you know, cleaning every surface, getting rid of germs. And I thought increasingly in recent years and decades, a kind of tendency to push away from antibacterial wipes and the excessive hygiene, because we need some exposure to hygiene. Exposure to germs in order to be healthy. Are we now kind of, because of this virus, is the pendulum swinging back toward, you know, perhaps even excessive cleanliness on surfaces and such?
Well, I think that it will be more, people will be more cautious. I mean, you can see the exposure to germs. You can't guarantee the outcome. You can see with SARS-CoV-2. So exposure to germs doesn't really make you more healthier. You know, that's a common myth, to be really honest, because I can't predict the outcome of anybody when they get infected in that with an illness. And developing an antibody against one virus doesn't protect you from another. So, but I think we will see that more. I think we've seen a lot of innovation in products, too. I don't think we can continue the same rate of cleaning and disinfecting in public places we've been doing. I don't think that's necessarily warranted with good hygiene behavior in that. It's somewhat overuse of chemical disinfectants. Hopefully we can backtrack to that. But still, that's not a reason to backtrack on good hygiene practices, though.
We had another listener wanting to know, is there a regular flu vaccine possible with the new techniques? I think the listener is referring to the way the Moderna and the Pfizer were engineered, the new platforms. Will this be a game changer as far as influenza vaccine, Dr. Gerba?
That's certainly the hope, and there's a lot going on in the influenza area to make more of a generic vaccine that would be useful from year to year also. So there's a lot of work going on in that area. So we may see, hopefully in the future, more generic vaccines that would get the variants that we see coming every year. That's certainly the hope for influenza, and that's where a lot of emphasis is going. But I think for now we're stuck with getting probably a new influenza vaccine every year for at least the next couple of years.
We haven't talked about hand sanitizers. Are they needed at this point in the epidemic, Dr. Gerba?
You know, I think it's a good idea for the hand sanitizer. One, they're very effective against the SARS coronavirus because it's an envelope virus, which makes them very sensitive. And because people don't wash their hands regularly enough or with proper procedures. You know, in our studies, the average Tucsonian in public only washes their hands for 11 seconds, only half use soap when they go to the sink. And CDC recommends 20 seconds and the use of soap. So I think hand sanitizers give you that extra barrier. I always wash my hands and use a hand sanitizer on it. So I think the combination of them are a good idea. We don't want to discourage good hand washing, but from our studies, not enough people do it. Only really in our studies, only about 1 in 5 persons come out of a public restroom haven't adequately washed their hands. That's why I don't kiss anybody's hands when they come out of the restroom.
I guess not. Oh, my goodness.
Everyone else does that.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Tim.
No, that's how I was going to say that. I'm glad we're getting rid of that practice, that common social practice.
Are you saying, Tim, that we will not be, can you see not shaking hands with people in the future? Is that kind of what you're saying?
No, I was talking about kissing, but actually that's a good point, Bill.
Yes.
The handshaking, it's hard for me to imagine people aren't kind of itching to get back to handshaking. Is that something that we should steer away from, or should we just kind of be sure to continue our improved hand hygiene?
Handshaking has been shown as a way of transmitting cold and flu viruses before in people. But I think I just can't give up that habit of doing it. You know, I think we will get back to it. I think I have people that I work with, and we would go to meetings, they do handshaking, then they use a hand sanitizer right afterwards. So that's another option. But I think it's just such a Western custom that we're going to go back to it.
Where are the filthiest places in our home, Dr. Gerba? Some things that might surprise people.
Well, your kitchen sponge. If there's ever a new life form that evolves on Earth, it's going to be in your kitchen sponge from what I've seen. Because it's wet, it's moist, everything grows in it. You're feeding it all the time. Number two is the sink. It's wet, moist. Number three is the cutting board. There are more fecal bacteria on a cutting board in a home and in a toilet seat. Safer to make a sandwich on a toilet seat in the average home than a cutting board, actually, from our studies. Not that I'm recommending that. But what it is, because people just they take raw meat products, cut them up on a cutting board, they just rinse it off, they don't disinfect it or put it in a washing machine, a dishwasher, and then that helps sanitize in that. But the kitchen has more fecal bacteria in it than your bathroom because people don't use disinfectants as much, and there's a lot more for bacteria to eat. So that's the germiest place in the home is your kitchen, actually, not your bathroom.
That's surprising. I had a quick question from a listener. Best cutting board material, is it wood or is there some other material that is the best?
You know, that's a good question. They for years, everybody said use plastic, you know, because wood, you cut a lot. But studies were done that there's natural resins in wood to kill the bacteria. So it's a toss-up now. Just got to take care of it. The best thing you can do is use separate cutting boards for meat and poultry and then put it in the dishwasher if you can, or use a spray disinfectant that can be used in the kitchen area. So I think it's a toss-up now because natural resins are very antimicrobial.
Tim, anything else or I have to wrap it up?
I was just going to ask, what if you don't eat meat or clean, you know, cut meat in your kitchen? Does that cut down on the risk quite a bit?
Yeah, it does. It really, most of it's brought in on your raw meat products and improper handling of your raw meat products. So definitely, I people have asked me that many times. I don't know if vegetarians have it. Vegetarians live longer, but they go to the toilet twice as much because of all the fiber they're eating. So you might be spending that extra lifetime on the toilet.
Oh, boy. all right, Dr. Gerber, we'll let you get back to your research and let us know if you do detect any of these coronavirus mutants, variants in the wastewater, and I'm sure that that's coming, and we'll hear about that when you get to that stage of your investigation. Thank you very much, Dr. Gerber.
Sure. You take care now.
Thanks a lot, Dr. Charles Gerber from the University of Arizona. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. Tim Stellar will stick around. Tim, have you been over to Green Things recently?
A few too many times. Yep, I'm noticing it on my in my checking account right now. Yeah, I have been there.
But I know you really. You're a big fan of Green Things. That's why I brought it up.
Oh yeah, yeah. I spent quite a bit of time there over this winter getting ready for this spring.
All right, we'll be right back with Tim Stellar. It's Buckmaster on a Friday afternoon. Be right back.
Noble Hops in Oro Valley is now open to welcome guests for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Noble Hops menu items are available for you, your family, and friends. So check out Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and on the web at noblehopspub.com.
The Arizona mining industry provides precious metals needed to support technical and structural equipment used by law enforcement, firefighters, and the military to keep us safe here and around the world. But the most critical part of public safety and national security is the people who serve without hesitation to protect us. The Southern Arizona Business Coalition stands with our men and women who serve with respect, responsibility, integrity, and discipline daily to keep us safe.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session. Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Our live line is sponsored by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Thanks to those folks. Tim Steller with us. Tim's on the live line. Tim, columnist with the Arizona Daily Star, and I learned some interesting things. That's why I do this show every day, to learn things, and I learned some interesting things about that Dr. Gerba shared with us. I am just so glad, Tim, that my engineer producer on the other side of the glass, Tom Fairbanks, is not a vegetarian, because he might not be on the other side of the glass when we need him, because we learned during the interview that vegetarians go to the bathroom twice as much as non-vegetarians.
Oh, wow. That was a long and winding road, Bill.
I know. I'm in a very happy Valentine's Day mood, right? Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't have gone there. But anyway, Tim, what about this recount of the state GOP? You wrote about it today in the Political Notebook. Has the runner-up candidate... what has he been kept informed on the process for a recount to Kelly Ward?
As I understand it, no. He told me yesterday he hasn't had an email, voicemail, text message, anything explaining what's going on. And he to back up, after a few days, got some concerns about whether he the vote tally was correct in his narrow loss to Kelly Ward. He lost by 42 votes, which was around 3% of the total votes cast. And so he asked for a recount or something like that. And she has basically said, you know, there's nothing in the bylaws that allows for a recount. And they could have maybe done it that day, which was January 23rd. But Sergio Arellano didn't ask for it that day. The whole issue didn't arise for a couple of days until there were some concerns brought up about other races that were voted on at the GOP convention. So some GOP committee men are trying to gather enough signatures to call a special meeting. And that would require 40% of the state committee men, as I understand it. And so if they do that, then at this special meeting, they can consider what to do next, which could be even doing a revote. Probably if they get to the point of having a special meeting, that's really what they'll end up taking up.
So this was a very close vote, reflecting a very divided GOP, correct, Tim Steller?
Yeah, so to be clear, this was a runoff election. There were four candidates for chair of the party, and after the first round of voting, Kelly Ward was the leader, and then Sergio Arellano was second, narrowly ahead of Bob Lettieri. So Bob Lettieri dropped out of the race and threw his support to Sergio, and then and the other candidate, whose name escapes me, who had very few votes, also was eliminated. And so then in the second round, Arellano came very close, surprisingly close. Kelly Ward, of course, was the incumbent chair. She's a long time. She was a former state legislator, a long time activist candidate on the kind of right wing, but it's kind of almost, that's too general to say, on the right wing side, though, of the Republican Party. And so she retained the seat, but she also retains control over this apparatus of recounting. So there's some sense of unfairness, like the people who aren't happy with her conduct are like, well, what do we do to, to get just treatment? So that's what this special meeting idea comes from. That's where it comes from.
It's kind of some irony in all of this because, of course, Kelly Ward, Dr. Ward, has said in some interviews, as you pointed out in your column, that there are no provisions in the party's bylaws for a recount to occur after the convention. A little bit of irony in that because, of course, Kelly Ward was one of the leaders in Stop the Steal movement nationwide, actually.
Yes, she's right. Of course, been pushing for pushing the idea that the Arizona election was stolen from Trump and that she wants a recount or an audit. They call it a forensic audit, but I never know what they mean by a forensic audit because, I mean, there's no such thing as a future-looking audit, is there? You're always looking backward in an audit. But anyway, I think people like the sound of forensic because maybe it has that kind of CSI sizzle. But so I think it was 18 legislators wrote an email to Kelly Ward saying, hey, you got to allow, did I say GOP legislators? 18 Republican legislators wrote an email to her saying, hey, you've got to, allow for a recount or audit or something of your election, because otherwise you're contradicting not only your own efforts but our efforts to get the Maricopa County supervisors to conduct an audit of their election. So the concern about hypocrisy is really live, and that is also animating some of the Republican state committeemen who want to have a special meeting.
Before we wrap this up, there's a breaking story about a Tucson brother and sister who have been charged by the FBI in the Capitol riot. They have been linked to the group Proud Boys. Was that arrest in Tucson, do you know, yesterday, Tim?
I believe that we reported that it was in Tucson. They, of course, are from Tucson, so that would be natural. Were you going to ask something else about that, Bill?
Yeah, I was just going to ask. I know I've got the story in front, the Star story in front of me. There was an update that the father of the Tucson siblings says all of this was a big shock, that the siblings were accused of rioting at the Capitol.
Yeah, so my colleague Kurt Prendergast got that interview with the father, and it was really interesting because, I would say the one key detail of that interview was that he said that it couldn't have been real Trump supporters who rioted at the Capitol because it had to be Antifa or Democrats. So, that's a completely debunked, ridiculous idea because there have been more than 200 people arrested and charged from the Capitol riot. they've all been the documented longtime Trump supporters. And so it's a denial. The degree of denial and echo chamber thinking really came through in that. But I also had to really kind of so on a political level, that's what I saw. On the other hand, I really had to sympathize just with, as with any, parent of someone who's accused of something. The guy coming home from work, he said he turned on, I think, KVOA News and saw his kids there.
Wow.
And was shocked, and that's just one of those things I think we can all kind of relate to.
All right, Tim, before I wrap it up, what are you working on for your column that will appear in the Sunday Arizona Daily Star?
I've been thinking for a while about this question of our budget. Well, we have a lot of money sitting around in state coffers, $1 billion in our rainy day funds, $400 million in CARES Act money. And the leaders of the state government are basically saying, oh, we don't want to spend that. We want to hold on to it. And I don't see the sense in that when there are specific pandemic related needs to be met. I don't get hoarding that money. So I'm going to be digging into that a little bit.
I say spend it on the immediate needs, but that's just one man's opinion. Anyway, Tim Stellar, thank you very much. A very informative hour. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. Tim Stellar, the Arizona Daily Star Weekend Watch, Valentine's Day, President's Weekend Edition with Matt Russell right after this.
Here at Bon Voyage Travel, we encourage you to keep the travel spark alive by exploring the world through our weekly webinar series that includes inspiration and insight from some of the top leaders in the travel industry. When you're ready to plan your next adventure, know that Bon Voyage Travel will be here to advise and assist. Join us every Wednesday at 3 p.m. for a new virtual destination discovery. While we're apart, let's keep dreaming together. Visit bvtravel.com for more information.
Reed Park Zoo is now open for wildlife walks, a modified guest experience, prioritizing social distancing and safety. To find out more about all the changes and the new safety precautions now in place, visit reedparkzoo.org. The community-approved 10-year master plan ensures that your zoo's future is brighter than ever before. We've missed you, and so have the animals. They're waiting to welcome you back to the Reed Park Zoo.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops, craft beer, and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson, Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax, which expires in June 2026. To prepare for ongoing project delivery, the RTA board established a Citizens Advisory Committee to select projects for a new draft plan. The committee will help identify which projects to invest in to best meet regional transportation needs. Learn more about plan development and provide early input at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
There it is. It's Weekend Watch with Matt Russell. This portion of the Buckmaster Show, and specifically the Friday edition of Weekend Watch, presented by our friends in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Just a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Through the years, we've sent so many of our listeners to that area, and we are going to send a lot more once New Mexico once again welcomes out-of-state visitors. The case numbers are looking better, so hopefully that day is coming very soon that you can jump in the car and head over to Silver City and do some hiking in the Gila National Wilderness and stay at some great places. For more information about things to do and where to stay, please start your visit by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Let's welcome now the award-winning Tucson publicist and the longtime host of Weekend Watch, Inside Tucson Business Food and Beverage columnist, Mr. Matt Russell. Hey, happy Valentine's Day, Matt.
Well, to you and your lovely bride as well. You know, as we speak, I'm picking up the Cupid costume from the cleaners. You know, I always like to give that an annual go.
I think through the years since you began Weekend Watch with us in 2011, it's just a guest. I think it shrunk a little bit.
Year after year, sadly.
Anything going over on the Dutch Eatery and fine cuisine from Amsterdam?
You know, absolutely. You know, especially if you're in that U of A area, you know, you and your lovebird might want to check out the Dutch Eatery and Refuge, of course, on Park and University. Chef Marcus Van Winden has put together a lovely menu that I think will suit the celebration well. It's a three-course meal with several entree options. One of which is lobster ravioli in a brown butter sauce.
Are wow.
Are you kidding me?
That
is flanked by a caprese salad on the front end and a chocolate lava cake on the back with some signature cocktail and wine selections picked just for this weekend. You can either eat in or take it home. Only $59 a couple, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Pick your night and pucker up at the Dutch.
Anything special planned at the Wildflower this weekend?
Yeah, for sure, especially, Bill, for your listeners on the northwest side of town. The iconic Wildflower on Oracle and Ina just might be the perfect fit for the flavors that you're looking for on Sunday. This is another gorgeous three-course evening with, get this, 16 choices spread throughout your appetizer, entree, and dessert courses. To get the evening underway, the miso prawn and coconut bisque with burnt lime and chili oil sounds decidedly swoon-worthy, and that's just the beginning. The dinner is $55 a person, extra $25 with an optional wine pairing. It promises to be a wild night for you and your honey at Wildflower.
Is Boca stepping up this weekend, Matt Russell?
You know, Bill, stepping up is perfect because, you know, tacos typically dominate the menu at Boca on 4th Avenue, and nothing wrong with a taco if you're celebrating love, but Chef Maria Maison is really pushing culinary boundaries in a way that will ignite the passion between you and your sweetie. This four-course evening will include center-of-the-plate specials, including green chili rellenos with aji tuna escabeche and something called tres moles with grilled chicken, showcasing three distinct expressions of that classic Mexican mole sauce. And here's something cool, Bill. Chef Maria was recently selected to compete on the Bravo Network's Top Chef program this year. This is a really big deal. The episodes start on April the 1st, so while you're setting your DVR, this weekend is a chance to meet a real culinary celebrity on Valentine's Day.
Oh, bravo to Bravo. That's a wonderful honor indeed. Matt, what about the Inside Tucson Business columnist? Are you getting into the Valentine's Day thing on this, or what are you covering?
Well, in this weekend's edition, this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business, I'm looking at that new member-driven private club high atop the Lowell Stevens football facility in Arizona Stadium. It's called the Arizona Sands Club. I have the opportunity to take a tour and to meet the chef, and I tell a fun story in this week's edition because the first thing you notice when you walk into this private club is that there's a hog in the house. And people say, what? What does that mean? Well, that's Executive Chef Matthew Hogg. And I sort of tell the whole hog story, if you will, in this week's edition of Inside Tucson Business.
Have a great weekend, Matt. Thanks.
Cheers. Thanks.
The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, wholly responsible for the content of the program. Thanks to my assistant, Rosemary Brandt, and everyone here at KVOI, including engineer-producer Tom Fairbanks, all of us wishing you a safe and pleasant weekend. Now, in honor of Valentine's Day, which is Sunday, we leave you with the finale of Love of My Life, performed by Carly Simon.